want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You wanna. Do you want a podcast? Do you want a show? Do you get your laughs from computer radio with this bro, Scotty Mo? It's about time to lose your shit. Everybody spark a spliff for that legend, Kevin Smith.
Welcome to Smodcast. I'm Kevin Smith. Okay, I'm in New Jersey, which I haven't been since October when we started the Jay and Silent Bob Reboot Roadshow Tour. And when I came out here to start the tour, me and Jay went to the Paramount in Asbury Park, sold out, big theater, it was wonderful. Right before we went to do the show, and it was the very first show of the tour, you know, for the next 64 nights after that, at the other cities, I would know what I was doing. This was the very first one. So I was like, man, let's figure out what it's going to be. And I was feeling pretty good about myself, pretty chuffed, because I was like, we made this fucking movie. I survived a heart attack. I'm feeling fucking, we're going on the tour. It's all sold out. Everything's fucking copacetic and shit. And while I'm in Jersey, naturally, I get to see my boys. They came out to see the movie, all of the comic book men and whatnot. But from that night forward, all the way to through the end of the tour, I was haunted by an image that I saw backstage when I stopped to take a picture with one of my closest friends in the world, one of the people I love dearest. Quite like me at one point, but not like me. I'd gone way bigger, but he had girthed up as well. And quite like me, I think probably assumed, well, such is life. You know, you have a shape for a minute, and then one day you're just as fat as fucking everybody else. Or in his case, you're just as fat as Kev. And he was happy because he wasn't quite getting there anyway. Well, the guy I saw backstage, this fucking skinny mini that I went to, took prom pictures with years ago. He was so fucking thin. It was like, you know, a lot of people over the course post-heart attack coming up to me and they're like, oh, fuck, you look different and shit. This cat looked different, man, and it kept me eating right the whole tour because I was like, Jesus, he looks good. That guy looks so good, he finally fucking nailed a wife, ladies and gentlemen. He was able to secure love eternal, that thing that we all look for, and honestly, the thing I think he'd be the last guy in the world to find, and he found it in fucking spades. One of the great regrets of all this quarantine nonsense is I did not come out to see my friend make the biggest step of his life, get married and whatnot. And I wish I could have been there because you've heard me say it 1,000 times. There are 2 people in this world without whom I got nothing. And naturally, a lot of people first want to be like, Jay. And I'm like, well, yes, of course. But I don't get to Jay without Walter and Brian. And I don't get to Randall. I don't get to Clerks. I don't get to any of this shit unless I sit at the knee of my friend Brian Johnson and train again in what is and what isn't funny. The last great meal that I had before I went out on the journey of my lifetime was 6 incredibly strong years that I spent with Brian Johnson. And that's our guest today on Smodcast, the recently married, and he probably took her name. He's such a bitch. Brian Johnson Knee. What's your new last name?
Yeah, Hotel Johnson. I hyphenated. Yes. I was like, I'm a man.
I'm hyphenate. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
What is it like being married? And why? How the fuck? And I mean, I've known Mary Beth a little through you, obviously, through the time that you've known her. But then when the word came down, they're like, oh, they're actually getting married. I was like, what? What? Brian Johnson?
My Brian.
Yeah, not the Brian Johnson I know. You mean Brian Johnson from the Breakfast Club. That kid I can see getting married. You know, fucking him. Anthony Michael Hall.
AC/DC.
Yes, or that guy. Well, maybe not him either. How did it happen? Who asked who?
Well, I asked her.
Did you?
Yeah.
The least traditional motherfucker on the planet.
Well, I didn't ask her dad. I was like, I can't go that far.
Because you're 2 minutes older than him or what?
Yeah, at least 3. It's closer than was comfortable. Like if you're actually at the wedding, you're like, he doesn't look that much older.
Yeah, I think it goes older than her dad. For those who don't follow that closely, Brian Johnson, star of Comic Book Men, the star of Tell 'Em Steve Dave, he married Mary Beth, and Mary Beth is how much younger than you?
She's 26 years younger.
Are you fucking shitting me?
She's 26. She'll be 27 in January. So she's kind of like 26 and a half.
Oh my God. You got one of them like scandalous marriages and shit. I just read one of those things on Twitter, like somebody's like unroll to the thread and shit. And they listed all these people that dated younger people. And it wasn't just guys, although it was predominantly guys, celebrities. But like one was like a famous woman where I was like, holy fucking shit. They can add you to that list.
Nice. Now, finally.
A list. You could be shoulder to shoulder with some of the best in the business.
Yeah, it is. It's obviously weird. I don't go around thinking like, well, nobody notices.
It's not weird anymore, though, is it?
Because I don't even think about it. But every once in a while, there will be somebody who assumes I'm her dad.
Are you fucking shitting me?
Once in a while. I haven't gotten grandfather, so that's good.
Your grandfather is so hip. Yeah. What? When it happens, I see you being very funny about it. Or you're like, fucking, you've offended me.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Yeah, I go along with it. Like one time somebody said something about me being her dad, and I just played along with it, and then suddenly, like, kissed her real deep.
And they're like, so that's how it goes in that house.
I mean, even like during the wedding, like I made jokes about being so much older than her, and like her parents never said anything to me. They never said anything to her. They're very liberal, I guess, because they never gave her any static. In fact, they helped her move here when she
from
was,
where,
she lived in Ohio. She went to college in Ohio. She had just graduated when I met her on the first IJ cruise.
Impossible, Impractical Jokers, for those who are like, what?
Impractical Jokers cruise, and we just kept in contact and kept talking.
So she went on the cruise?
Yes.
She was a fan of, like, the Impractical Jokers?
She was a fan of mine specifically.
You, but did she know you from Impractical Jokers?
No,
were you ever on the show?
Well, she saw Impractical Jokers.
It's the fucking John. She's like, she was a fan of mine specifically. She was? Like, obviously.
She was. I don't get that often.
You're like, I got one.
So she's a fan of Impractical Jokers, and then through that, she learned of Tell 'Em Steve Dave, and through that, she learned of all the View Askew stuff. So it's like this whole, like, three-tiered world that, like,
in order to get to you, in order to fucking find you. So she goes on the cruise. Does she, like, come up to you right away and be like, oh, my God, I'm a huge fan of you?
I went in the wrong entrance. Like, I went in where, like, everyone lines up, not the VIP performer or whatever. Right. So I just went, I stood behind her, and she turned around. She goes, oh my God, Brian Johnson, can I get a picture? And I was like, sure. And so we took the picture and I talked to her for a minute. And then somebody who was like in charge and recognized me came over and then hustled me away to go in the right.
So hot. She must have been entrance. Like, oh, look how fucking famous he is.
So famous that, you know, he only had to stand in line for a little while.
He's stupid, but famous.
So it was probably 4 or 5 months after we first met that she moved here. And, at the time I was like, well, why are you moving to New Jersey? Like, specifically this area. And she's like, oh, you know, I want to get into graphic design and that kind of stuff. New York's right there. And I'm like, well, why not move? Cause then it got me a little nervous that I'm like, I don't want you to move here for me. Cause I don't know what would happen. And then, you know, I didn't think anything.
You want me to respond? I mean, look, now you're happy to be responsible for another human being. But at the beginning of this, you're like, I don't want to be responsible for another human being.
Yeah, at the time, I was kind of responsible for one already that I didn't want to be. So, so she moved here, and then we just kept seeing each other, and it just grew from there. We went on all four of the Impractical Jokers cruises together. It's just weird. Like, she almost didn't make it on the cruise because—
The first one where she met you?
The first one, yeah, because there was a snowstorm, and— they waited overnight at the airport so they could fly in the next morning. And then she's like, we barely got on the boat. Like, we were barely in time. We didn't think we were going to make it. So I'm like, all that to go into me going in at that same moment to take a picture with her. I'm like, it's just, there's something weird about it. I'm not so corny as to be like, it was fate, but.
Why not? Just, the way how old are you happen. Now? If I'm 50, or how old?
53. No, 52. I just said 53. I think I'm
anticipating. So in December, you're going to be 53. Yeah. At this age, and like here, I'm here to tell you, like, it's okay to not be a hard guy when it comes to the heart. I know you really are. It's adorable. Still to this age, he's like, I'm worried that fucking, I don't know, Mark London's going to make fun of me or something like that.
Yeah, I'm going to look corny in front of Mark London.
It's still this like weird chip on the shoulder of like, you know, I don't want to fucking say that it's fate, but you know, it was a good timing, but it is fate. It is beautiful. There's something poetic about that. There's something like how many things had to go right in order for her to be standing there and you to be standing behind her and her to be like, holy shit, can we take a picture? And then you to be like, oh, I remember her later on and start talking to her more, I assume. Like, that is huge, dude. You don't have to be a hard guy about that. You could be like, you could be sappy as fuck. And I guarantee you, this is what I promise you. Every member of the TESD audience would go with it. Nobody's going to be like, well, I'm fucking out of this Patreon. He sounds like a total fucking pussy now.
Remember the early episodes?
Yeah, he was so hard, man. Now he's softened by love. I think they would fucking be so incredibly happy for you, man. It's wonderful to see people happy. And think about it specifically. The TESD audience? Like, for those that don't listen to Tell Them Steve Dave, if there's a not crossover so much in this audience, but I think there is a lot.
Curse you.
I know. How dare you? It's been like, you know, a decade as Brian's therapy, essentially. Like, you want to know what's going on in Brian Johnson's head and heart. You could literally listen.
I want to tell you.
It's going to be there and you're going to hear it. And some of it's dark. But those cats hearing you, like, you know, it's a poor analogy. But remember Gloria Vanderbilt? She made the jeans.
Of course, yeah.
She was the Vanderbilt kid and shit like that. They made a book, I think, wrote a book or a movie called Little Gloria, Happy at Last. I'll never forget the title because I'm like, when I was a kid, I was like, fuck Little Gloria. Why should I give a shit she's fucking happy at last? But there could totally be, and it's probably going to be the name of this podcast, Little Brian, Happy at Last. Like you got to a place where, you know, you had a very set view of what the world was, is, and was always going to be. Maybe not as rigid as Walter's, but definitely, you know, you were reaching midlife and shit, so you definitely knew a thing or two about a thing or two, and you'd done things with your life. And then suddenly it's redefined by the introduction of a new person who changes your life so much so that you, the guy least likely, proposes. How did you propose?
So I asked her if she wanted to go for a vacation down in Key West. And I brought the ring, going to propose down there. And my idea was, because do you know Dave Landau? He's a comedian.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know him personally, but I've heard the name.
He has a buddy down in Key West who owns a comedy club. Mm. So I asked Dave, hey, can you contact him? And long story short is I was going to do stand-up for the first time.
By yourself?
By myself, yeah, at this comedy club.
I'm going to put a pin in it right there. Okay. This is something, by the way, I've been begging Brian to do for fucking decades. Brian is one of the funniest people I've ever met, and I'm always like, oh my God, you don't need, like, when Brian and Walter are busy, I said, you could stand on a stage by yourself and talk. Like, you're just that funny and that interesting. So it's nice to hear that you were actually, have you done that many times? Or
no, I hadn't done it at all before.
So this was the first time?
This is the first time.
Just, we'll go back to the story, but since then, have you done it?
Since then, I did it one more time, and then all the corona shit kicked in.
I think it's something you would excel at. Anyway, back to the story. So you organized a club gig.
Organized a club gig. And the idea was that she wouldn't know. And I thought, like, you know, we'll go in, I'll relax a little bit, and then I'll have them call me up, and I'll have my GoPro set up and all this other shit. So I take her out to dinner first, and the guy starts texting me. He's like, where are you? And I'm like, oh, I thought I'd show up, you know, a little bit later around 10 or 10:30, but it's Key West and it's during Fantasy Fest, which is like their Mardi Gras.
Right.
So he's like, well, we're not like busy tonight. You know, there are people hanging around waiting for you. And I didn't know that. So I was like, oh shit. All right. So I rush the dinner. We get to the comedy club. Now it was supposed to be a surprise, but then I look on, they have like a TV screen as you go into the, club. And it's like my picture and my name up there. It's like, you know,
headliner
there.
Right.
And she didn't see it. So that was good. But then as we walk in.
So she didn't know that you were going to be playing the gig.
No, she didn't know. She said she suspected later on.
And was she just to do some color on the story? Had she been encouraging you to do that sort of thing?
Oh, stand-up?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, so you going, hey, let's go see a stand-up show, and then you being like, oh, by the way, I'm the artist.
Right.
Would have been, like, her not only, like, holy shit, that was cool, but right on. You did what I said you should do. You should go be funny.
Should be proud of it.
Smart move. And so in the midst of that, your plan was to then be like, this isn't all of, as if all this isn't good enough, by the way, will you marry me?
Right.
So that was the plan?
That was the, well, no, no. It was built into the end of the act. So it was actually, it was the proposal.
So you would do a whole fucking show.
I was going to do a set.
And at the tail end of it, then propose.
Then propose, yeah.
Boy, that's counting on her being like, I stayed through the whole show. She's like, oh, I left halfway through. I figured I'd see you at the hotel. And you're like, Mary Beth, will you marry me? Yeah. And fucking there's no crickets.
You have better jokes. Why wouldn't you use them? Like, well, I told some good ones at the end. If you hadn't.
People in the audience are like, this bit sucks. And you're like, this isn't a bit. This is my life.
This is a real tear.
So what happens?
So I walk
in. So you find out that you're a bigger deal at this club than you realize.
Yeah, I'm the linchpin that's keeping the place open that night. You know? Right. So I go to
like, we
down.
Want the show. And you're like, boy, I wonder what show they want. They're like, you asshole, get in there.
You're the show. So I go in. I haven't even sat down yet. And the guy comes up to me and he's like, hey, you ready to go on? And I was like, oh, I thought I'd have a minute. And he's like, no. He wants you to go up there right now. So I'm like, all right. So I put my bag to the side. It has my cameras, which I'm not going to have now, and my GoPro and the ring and stuff in the bag. So I go up and I talk to the guy for a minute, and then I start the act. Now, what I thought was like maybe going to be 5 minutes was not 5 minutes, and I'm not that good at memorizing shit. So
you thought you had like a good five-minute set?
Mm-hmm. I thought I had 5 minutes. It turned out to be 20 minutes.
Wait, so how much were you? You were the night was you, right? They weren't like, get up there for five and then get off.
No, I could. Yeah, like I was going to be the last person that night because they have like some house comedians and stuff that had gone up before that.
Right.
Like locally.
So they all opened and shit. Like
right.
That. Even more irritating for them. They're like, we fucking killed for this guy to open and he's not even here.
Well, they waited around for like an hour, everybody.
Are you shitting me?
There was like 30 people in the audience, something like that.
All right. So you get there.
So get there. I get up on the stage. I talk to the MC for a minute and then I start the act and it's going pretty decently, but I'm like, wait, what comes next? I don't remember. But I have my note cards. I'm like only going to resort to them if need be. Now, later on, I found out a lot. Like I talked to a couple stand-ups and like, everybody does.
They put their papers
there,
out there. Absolutely.
Put their papers out. I was like,
When we did Jay and Silent Bob Get Old for the first 7 years, I had an open laptop in front of me. And all it literally said was, welcome, chatter, Jay sex story, how long you've been clean and sober. Let us fuck. Just because I was such a stoner, I didn't want to be up there and be like, wait, what the fuck comes next? You know, might as well have a roadmap there. And then eventually I didn't need it anymore.
I want to hear another six degrees of separation.
Fuck is, yes.
She went to a Jay and Bob Get Old show and she was a contestant on Let Us Fuck.
She was one of the Let Us Fuck?
One of the girls, yeah.
Where at? Where was it? Do you know?
I don't. It was probably somewhere in Ohio.
That's where she lived?
She lives in Ohio. So it was probably. So
maybe Studio 35.
Could be. I'll ask her.
That is fucking crazy, man.
Yeah, and that was before we met, she and I.
She had gone to the show before she even met you on the fucking boat and shit. Mm-hmm. I remember it like at one point, I don't think it was that. She didn't go to the premiere, the reboot premiere, right? No, I'm thinking about something early on when you were like, you got to say hi to this chick on the phone. Just show your face on the screen.
Oh, yeah,
it'll
yeah.
blow her fucking mind. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who is it? And it fucking future wife.
Yeah, and I was like really hoping that she'd be topless or something.
I know, you're like, she might be naked. It'll embarrass her so much.
Handing it to you.
you get up, you're doing what you think is 5 minutes and then is going to hand off to the proposal?
It was going to hand off to the proposal. But
you had way more content than you imagined.
More content than I thought.
First off, is it making people laugh?
Yes.
So, of course, it's feeding you as well.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're just like, well, fuck, that's funny. I've got a few more. Fuck this ring. Hold on.
So at a certain point, I'm like, I don't know what comes next. Let me refer to my cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to my cards, and wisely, I hadn't numbered them, and they were jumbled and out of order.
Nice.
So now I'm on stage looking through my cards to see what comes
next. Not this one.
Yeah. like it was three cards, and then I got mad and I go, fuck it. And I threw the cards all over the stage. And they're like fluttering everywhere. And I was like, I'm just going to talk to you guys.
Nice.
And then
I'm glad you said that. I was going to jump in early and be like, why are you writing anything down? Like, you're the most extemporaneous. You do it every week on a podcast. You don't write shit down when you do Tell Him Steve Dave, do you?
No.
So you just shoot from the fucking hip. But, you know, it's a process. Yeah, you figured it out yourself. You got there. So you just started talking to him.
Just started talking, and I hit a couple points that I could remember, talked about a few other things, and then towards the end, I can't remember how I rolled into it, but I said, you know, I was like, what's most important this night is an old man getting down on his one fake knee and asking his girlfriend if she'll marry him, you know? And by that point, I was on my knee and had the ring and shit, and then she's crying. And
did you know where she was sitting the whole time?
Yeah. Thankfully, there were people there who were listeners and shit, and they did, like, video for me, and they sent it and stuff, so that was cool.
Oh, my God, so you didn't even think in advance, like, I should have somebody shoot this most historic moment of my life.
No, I thought my GoPro was going to be the
it was going to be doing it and shit. How nice, though, that fucking fans had it.
Yeah, that was nice. And then what was weird, though, was—
Where was this again?
This was down in Key West.
In Key West. Oh, my God. So, and what time of year? I mean, it's always
October.
Nice there.
Yeah,
so fucking like, not only like when the night's done, you go out into the night air and it's beautiful out and you're in love and fucking this woman has just said she's going to get married to you. Like, is it got to be top 10?
Top of the world type.
You know what I'm saying? Oh my God. Fucking that's what everyone labors like bitches in heat their whole life to have a moment of happiness like that. And for a lot of people, that would be it. Like, that's the highlight and shit.
Mm-hmm.
You got spoiled. You had your own fucking TV show. So, like, it's tough to fill that cup again. You know what I'm saying? Like, for somebody who's like, I fucking fell in love with somebody and we got married and that's the story of our life. That's beautiful. That's my parents. That's what I wanted when I was a kid. But if you get something else and you get that fucking, like, sweetest plum of, like, fame, with celebrity, of respect from fucking strangers and shit like that. Really tough to just be content with like the normal.
Right. Yeah.
Suddenly you're just like, I mean, I've had people cry looking at me and just like talking and saying, my God, you're Brian Johnson. Like, so you've got to be able to up your fucking game. You know, it like, I could see, whereas, you know, other people, perhaps people listening to, you know, a decade's worth of Tell 'Em Steve Dave would be like, oh, how nice for Bri, he got married. But from this side of the street, I'm just like, anything's possible. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh my God, if Brian could fucking fall in love, if Brian can find love so much so that he's willing to become and do traditional things, which if you know anything about Brian, traditional is nowhere in his fucking makeup and stuff. Again, we don't get a Randall without Brian. So to see Brian do something traditional speaks volumes about Mary Beth. Like, you know, the old adage of how do you keep him down on the farm once they've seen Perry? This motherfucker's seen Perry. And I'm not just talking because he was in fucking an AMC show, ladies and gentlemen. But that fucking is that money spends and it's sweet. And not just because he made a movie that went to the Toronto Film Festival. And not just because he does Tell Him Steve Dave, which has been running for a fucking decade and shit. I forgot what my point I was making. What was my point?
I don't know. I liked how you were getting
it. I know. I was fucking building. I was like, it was this. It's this. It's this.
Oh, I think that there's hope for anyone if there's hope for me in terms of...
What I was saying, no, we were back to Mary Beth, why she was special. Because you've tasted those highs. High highs, man. You know, when it's...
We're not talking about the pills.
No, fucking, well, there's that as well. Low highs. Very low highs. But because you fucking like, you know, it's not like, oh, because you've been on TV. It's more than that. It's just like what comes along with that. How... You've had, like, not everyone can say this. People have traveled from around the world to come see you. Like, the way that, like, they would for Jesus or Mahatma Gandhi or something like that. And maybe not as many, but whatever, fuck. Like, how many people in this life will know that feeling of, like, a total stranger got on a fucking international flight because I was going to go talk with my friends. And you have that. And you have had that over and over in many ways in your life. And yet you found somebody who not only matches that, but surpasses it. Where you're like, oh, those were not high highs. This is the high high. This is like, I thought that was good. This is amazing. This is real.
It's like afterwards, like when we left Key West, we drove up to Miami Beach. Like on that drive back, I was like, this is what a natural high feels. I hear people talk about it.
Right.
Like
it's true. It's so weird. I always think of you as like the funniest person I know, but that doesn't mean you're the happiest person.
Right.
I associate funny with happy, but like a lot of your humor comes from like, I'm sad.
It's painful. Yeah.
And for you to say that, to be like, I understand what fucking like a natural high is and shit. Like that, for my friend at this stage in his life, like, you know, people get this usually in their fucking 20s and shit. And if you don't get it put together then. Yes. This motherfucker is 1 foot from the grave. As soon as they started announcing COVID and they're like the elderly, I'm like, okay, we got to check on Brian Johnson.
Yeah, I'm past the age where they're like, we got to be nervous about this guy.
And I was laughing at you until my kid was like, you're a heart attack. You're high risk. And I was like, I'm just as weak as him.
I'm like, Johnson,
a couple fucking weaklings. for you to find in her a match to that energy that you can get from the world, from your work, speaks volumes about who she is. When did you realize you were in love with her? Because I would imagine you would be slow to grab that.
Yeah, she was like, I didn't think you would ever say that.
Mm.
But it was a couple years in.
Oh, fucking like, make it work for it.
Where like maybe a year and a half where I actually said it in the vows. I was like, I knew it the day that I said it to you. We went out on like this date at an Asian restaurant. And that was the first time I was like, you know, I love you.
I love you.
Yeah, she was like, you do? And she started crying. Like I was in that moment, I'm like, well, I guess I'm not showing it enough because
like I'm failing. These tears, they should make me feel good, but they
startled her.
Yeah, I'm scared of this woman.
Right away she's like, I love you too. And then from then it was like, you know, kind of not that long before that would have been in like January. And then by October for the trip, I was like, let's get engaged. And October to now in August.
Was there any, that's October. So I saw you in October. Mm-hmm. For the October 19th was when we had started the tour. Had you gotten engaged at that point?
No, it was right before that.
So the tour, you went to reboot right before the Key West thing.
Yeah.
Because I forget who told me. I think it was Jordan who was just like, Brian got engaged. And I was like, Brian Quinn, of course, he's a silly heart who loves. She's just like, Brian Johnson. Like, Brian Johnson, no, he's a hate tank. Seems.
He doesn't love to love.
Amazing that you guys decided to keep doing it in the middle of the fucking quarantine and shit.
Well,
what was the thought process there?
Originally, we were supposed to go to Colorado.
To go to the fucking Shining Hotel.
Stanley Hotel, yeah.
That Jordan told me that because I was like, oh my God, she's like, they're going to get married at the Shining Hotel. I was like, now that. I said, when she told me you were engaged, I was like, that doesn't sound like Brian Johnson. And then she was like, he's getting married at the Shining Hotel. I was like, that sounds exactly like Brian Johnson.
So we scrapped that because of the COVID stuff, but she didn't want to change the date if possible. And just looked for best, wedding halls on the East Coast or whatever. And she eventually settled on this place in Maryland, at Baltimore called the Gramercy. Real nice grounds, like old mansion type place. So that's how she decided on that. You know, she did. I mean, and she literally did everything for the wedding. I think she didn't want me to help because, I mean, I didn't want to.
She's like, you got terrible taste.
Yeah. I mean, I think she's very clear on her ideas of what she wanted. So I was like, all right, if you want to do it, you need help, you let me know. If not, I'm not going to keep asking you.
What was the highlight of the actual wedding day? I remember when I got married, and I've talked about this a gazillion times on podcasts and shit, but like, I was like, oh, this is going to be like dating plus. Like, you know, we've been dating. She lives with me. Fucking she's pregnant with my kid. Like, what's the difference? But when I stood across from her and, you know, the priest starts talking and saying shit, I was just looking at her and I'm like, oh my God, it's you. My whole fucking life, I was wondering what you would look like. You know, I dreamed about you forever. Like, fucking the person that would be to me who mom was to dad. That relationship that I saw modeled, I didn't want to go, you know, Pam and Edgar. I went Grace and Don as a model. And I was like, you know, who will be that for me? You know, for years I thought it would be Kim Lochran when I was a kid and stuff. And, you know, and also I'm like... like Brian Quinn, I love to love. So like every girl I ever met, I saw her in a wedding dress before I ever mentally undressed her. I was like, she'd make a wonderful wife. You know, I always wanted to nest and shit like that. But like, this was an example where Jennifer was, you know, about to have Harley. And so we were like, oh, let's get married. We might as well. We're at Skywalker. This is beautiful here. Let's fucking do it. And pulled
it
together.
That's a great place to do it.
Fuck. I mean, that was what kind of instigated. She was like, this would be a great place to get married. And I was like, well. And then one thing led to another. But standing across from her and finally seeing her, you know, as that person, not just like, oh, you're Jen, the girl from USA Today, who's like fucking really hot, who I fucked. And then she got pregnant and we're getting married. And, you know, it's like suddenly I saw my wife, the person who I dreamed about my whole life, like who I would spend the rest of my life with.
Was there a surreality about it where you're like, this is weird. Like, this is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There was definitely a, like, I mean, I won't go so far as to say, like, out of body, but there was, like, this, you know, when they show in movies, motherfucker takes LSD and his hand goes a little slower mm-hmm. and waves or whatever. There's this sense of, like, at sea, because it is such a massive life change. Even if you downplay it right up to the moment, you realize that, like, once this fucking, the words are said and shit, it's so real that in order to stop it, you have to get the state and courts involved. Like the government has to come
in. All's rolling, bitch.
Exactly. So it's like, it's not just this like, what a concept. It's a reality. It's, you know, truly transubstantiation in the Catholic Church. That transubstantiation is when the priest lifts up the wafer and it becomes, in the belief of a Catholic and that priest, of course, the body of Christ. That's transubstantiation. So a guy like you, you go and you're like, they're holding up a wafer. He held up a wafer and then he gave out wafers. What's the difference? To a hardcore believing Catholic, he held up a wafer. It turned into the fucking body of Christ. And that's what people are eating is the body of Christ. That's truly what they believe. And that's what the term transubstantiation means.
I know that.
I forget why the fuck I brought it up in the first place, but I think it was in reference to you.
What was the high point of the wedding, you said?
Oh, the wedding is a trans. Thank you. Thank God you're here. The wedding is a transubstantiation. Like something literal, like what looks like a ceremony to outsiders. Like if you're sitting there watching you two, you're like, oh, how nice. He said the thing. She said the thing. She's wearing a dress. He's dressed nice. Fucking this is the way it's supposed to be. This is what people do. The people in it are completely changed. They aren't two people anymore. They are this one unit that, like, if you wanted to split up, you got to go get a fucking court. Like, it's pretty damn impressive, man. And again, like, not because I'm like, you know, he's an idiot who could never find love, but I just never imagined at this stage in the game that it was going to be you. And it just makes me so happy. And it ought to give anybody in the audience, like, fucking hope. Mm. That they'll find theirs. I mean, it helps to have a fucking TV show and a successful podcast that made movies and
never
shit.
Met. Yeah,
believe me, dude, I think about it all the time. I mean, I always thought about it, but now I think about it a lot because like I'm 50. But, you know, you want to talk about the out of body or the kind of like the weird surreal moment. I talk about this like with Jennifer and it makes her so fucking mad. There are times like, you know, it'd be like 2 a.m, I'll walk around my house and, you know, you've been to the house. Jennifer like puts family pictures up all over the wall and shit like that. Mm-hmm. So big stretch of them, you know, a lot of them are me and my friends or fucking the kid growing up and stuff. But there's a big, you know, fucking stretch of them that's like me and her parents, Byron and Gail, and like the world she came from before we were kind of together. And I'll stand there at night and just be like, and it's probably because I'm blazed, but I'm like, who are these people?
I feel the same way sometimes. Yes. I'm like, how did, like, I'll look at her, I'll be like, how did, it's usually when I'm stoned, but I'm like, how did this happen?
Yes. It's just weird because you have an idea in your head of how things are, how things will be. And even, you know, in my case, shit went crazy and like life exceeded even dreams and stuff. But like, I'll look at their photos on the wall and I'm these are people I've spent the last 20 years with. Byron and Gail live with us. It's not even like, oh, we see them every, you know, fucking month or whatever. They fucking help raise Harley with us. But, and Jennifer is the person I'm the most intimate with in the entire world. I'll still look and be like, never to her face. Never. I never look at her and be like, who are you? But when I look at the pictures, I'm like, how did fucking the girl from Florida wind up here? Like, how did we... What? When did this? Because life moves pretty fucking fast. But the thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately is, and I think I've probably mentioned it before. I mean, that's the thing. You podcast as long as we've podcasted.
You're going to repeat a story or two.
Oh my God. Like, I'm sure it would make me cringe if I ever listened to them all back to back to
like
back.
Like a super cut.
To hear how many times like which story gets told the fucking most and shit. But I think about, like, you know, all of this because you hit 50 and the movies hit 25. You know, Clerks hit 20. Mallrats is 25 this year. Clerks was 26 last year. I've now been a filmmaker or that Kevin Smith longer than I was the other Kevin Smith who wasn't doing it, who wasn't an entertainer for a living. Things worked out for me. Things wound up working out for you guys in a bizarre fucking, like who knew? Nobody could have seen that coming. You would have a fucking television show.
I thought just today, this morning, I was like, on paper, I should not be as successful as I am.
But that's, well, my point is this. Me, you, Walter, Brian, Jason, hung out together for a very short period of time, a very long time ago. You and I start hanging out circa late 88. I graduate Hudson. Like, I'm fucking not going out with Kim anymore and shit. That's when I'm working at the rec. I'd been there for a year and fucking finally Walter talked to me and shit. And then I start hanging out with Walt. And then by virtue of that, I meet up with Brian. I've known Bri from town. He's like town famous and shit. Bri would mack on my girlfriend right in front of me in the lunchroom. And it was so charming. I was like, go on. He's funny. Funny goes a long way in my world and shit. But because of the wreck, I meet Walter, start hanging out with Walter, and then Walter's dating Debbie, and it's the early stages of dating Debbie, so you only get Walter for a certain amount of time.
Weekdays.
So, yeah, weekdays up till about 6. As soon as Debbie was free, you got kicked to the fucking curb. And so Brian and I hung out a little, and then Brian left to go to California to go to fucking guitar school.
Yeah.
And then mercifully, Brian came back, and that's when we started hanging out pretty hardcore. So if you do the round math, let's say late 88 till, you know, let's take it till 93 when Clerks actually, let's take it to 94 because then the roller coaster begins. Clerks goes to Sundance and blah, blah, blah. Life changes irrevocably and dramatically. So that's 88, not even a full, so 89, 90, 91, 92, 93, and part of 94. 5 years of our lives together, and you and Walter go back much further. You know, you go back even way further than fifth grade. And I only start hanging out with you guys when you guys are out of high school, when I'm like a senior. So, but that 5 years of us hanging out, talking, going to do things, going to comic book shows, going to watch movies, going to act at a fucking Grand Union and getting a fresh baked cookies and then going to watch movies, fashion specs, getting knocked off heads and stuff. Like all the fucking broken hearts of like, you know, fucking, when will we find love? Why don't people see us for the value we have and
why
shit?
Do we keep on getting kicked out of high school parties?
Scumbags leave! That kind of shit. 5 years of that provided for the rest of our lives. You and I still eat out on that 5 years. Like, Walter still eats out on that 5 years. And that's not to say, like, and none of us have ever done anything since, but that is it. That's, if those 5 years don't happen, nothing else happens.
To me, that was like college.
Yes.
I was never going to make it in a regular college.
You're absolutely right. You know? That's it. You're fucking right. Like that, because he didn't go to college either.
No.
And neither did Jay. We made our own college. We weren't a college, but we were collegiate.
We were unaccredited.
Yes. I mean, we tried. We tried to go to Brookdale.
We couldn't even make it in Brookdale.
No, we really couldn't. But you're right. It is what, you know, I'm like, how remarkable. But for most people, that would just be their college years, and the 4 years they spend with those people, you know, is formative. And those people sometimes, like, follow them for the rest of their lives. They're still in each other's lives. I guess you're right. I guess that is kind of the parallel. But what are the chances, man? Like I was saying to Jay as we were driving down here, we landed at JFK this morning. We're driving on a parkway and I'm like, fucking chances that, like, you know, Gail Muse is like, all right, Highlands.
Right.
And what are the chances that fucking Grace and Don are like, all right, Highlands. Pam and Edgar are like, all right, Highlands.
Walt coming from Matawan or Aberdeen or someplace.
Yeah. Who's already established in New Jersey and then still going, oh, we'll go to Highlands. And you put four. And I don't mean this to sound like arrogant by any stretch of the imagination, but I think the last 25 years speak for themselves. Fate put four pretty powerful, pretty creative, pretty talented people into a very small space and never told them the intent. It was never like, if you do this properly, you can do this for the rest of your life. And I don't mean like, you know, fucking a version of this. I mean, literally, you could be yourself for the rest of your life. It's fortunate that we all met. Like, we all benefited from knowing one another, of course, over all these years and whatnot, just as friends. But, like, our financial well-being came out of that five-year period of just hanging out and building a world that, like, God, wouldn't it be perfect if it was this? The only, like, and it wasn't a bad thing, but the only thing we were hoping to change was, like, if we could just move out of our parents' house. Well, some of us. Walter, I think, was content to stay at his parents' house. But if there was, you know, that was the only big complaint. And maybe, like, fuck, I wish I made, like, $2 more per hour or something like that. But nobody was ever sitting around going, like, man, we're trying to fucking break into the arts and it won't happen for us. Like the kids in Fame, we probably would have watched Fame and you would have made fun of them. And I would have made fun of them with you. And inside been like, yeah, but those kids have a dream. But we, like, oddly enough, wound up becoming like the Fame kids, like in the last act of the movie, we sing The Body Electric. It's crazy. There are people wearing t-shirts with sentiments that fucking, you know, we threw around just for fun years ago. Like, I was talking to, who was it? Oh, I was telling a fucking story to Austin, Harley's boyfriend. And I was like, you know, and so I told Brian I was coming back to the store, but then Brian, he had to go on his picnic and shit. And so he fucking hung a sign that says store closed to bubonic plague. And Harley, like, pricks her head up and she's like, that was in Yoga Hosers. And I was like, you're right. But before it was in Yoga Hosers, this literally happened in real life. Yes, there was a human being who would actually do this in real life. We trained each other to be who we are today, and that's how we earn. Like, you don't make a living being anything but you. I don't make a living being anything but me. Walt don't make a living being anything but Walt. And Jason doesn't make a living being anything but Jason. None of us work for anybody else except the audience. And when you work for the audience, you never work a day in your life. All that fucking time enabled us to have the lives that, like, we dreamed about. Like, oh, fuck, wouldn't it be nice to not have a boss, fucking have to report to somebody. Brian used to have to wear a fucking suit when he worked at the movie theater. Oof.
I mean, that wasn't nearly as bad as the Domino's outfit. Multiple attempts at being a pizza boy.
I mean, it's fortuitous. This, you know, somebody, I've done a lot of press today for the movie's pop-up. That's what brings me back east, of course. And a lot of people are like, you know, the standard, what does Jersey mean to you? Or why do you keep coming back? Or not in a shitty way. Like, why are you here? I was like, remember that one time me and Brian were like, that was me and you. Remember fucking walking in Highlands when we were shooting Clerks 2 and the person yelled something out or fucking said shit. So we're shooting Clerks 2, the scene at Randall's house where Randall comes out, joins Dante in the car and they head off to movies. So that's my old house, 21 Jackson Street. And, you know, we're shooting right in my old neighborhood and they're setting up, you know, for a second shot. We did one angle. We're setting up for another angle. So I was grabbing a cigarette. I was a cigarette smoker in those days. And I was like, let's go for a walk. And I was talking to Brian because I hadn't seen Brian in a minute and stuff. And we got to catch up. So we're walking around the neighborhood talking. I was telling him how the filming was going and stuff. And this is us at the tail end of the movie, right? Like, because we shot everything out in Los Angeles and then came back to shoot the opening stuff. We walk past the house and you can't see inside. The shades are, screen is down. So it gives a darkened effect inside. And as we're walking, talking to each other, catching up, having a fucking good time, this voice comes out of the house and it goes, if you hate it in the Highlands so much, why do you keep making movies here? And I'm like, excuse me? I said, I love it in Highlands. And then there was no response. And I was like, hello? And we stood there just indignantly waiting and like waiting it out and shit. And I still pass that house from time to time and always think about that where I'm like, I would love to go knock on the door. I just, you know, I'm sure they'd call a cop or something. But just like, I've always wanted to know what you look like. Because it always...
You slighted me 20 years ago.
Yes. And it's like in a world where it was... faceless, it was almost like a condemnation that comes from inside, like my conscience or something like that. So it would have been nice to assign a face to it so I could be like, oh, it's not my conscience, it's some bitter woman who lived around the block from me in Highlands who didn't like my parents or some such shit, or likely didn't like me because
got like, all worked up with the white trash comment in Time.
I made a very big mistake once in Time magazine. I referred to my hometown at Highlands incorrectly, I will add, as I said, I grew up in a white trash town. And what I meant was white collar. But
I think what you meant was blue collar. Like working class.
Oh my God, you're right. See, I fucked it up again. You're right. I was trying to say working class and I said white trash town instead. And that, as you would imagine, like even now as I hear it, saying it out loud, I'm like, I want to write a letter like Dottie Kovic.
Yeah, she's the only one I remember as being very
incensed. I still have that letter, man. She was really incensed and shit. Like, she brought up my family. She was like, maybe you guys are white trash downtown. I was like, whoa, hey, over there. But you know what? She was fair to be fucking pissed. Now I think about it, like, you know, that was not my intent. I honestly wasn't saying like, oh, fucking Highlands full of white trash. I fucking love Highlands. I wear it like a fucking proud banner and shit. I didn't want to leave. I love New Jersey. So it was not that. I was absolutely trying to say blue collar and got it completely fucking wrong.
I remember thinking it was funny, though.
I know. You just like the anarchy of it. Like, yeah, fuck these white trash people. Let's see them react. Deal with it. And to be fair, as a slight defense, like we were called, because we lived downtown in Highlands, you would be dismissed by some as white trash. Even though Brian lived uptown, he would not be one of those people and stuff. But like we had preppies and fucking snobs that, you know, look, you build any community, they'll find a way to divide itself and be like, these people suck. They ain't got stars upon ours. And Highlands was like an uptown, downtown thing, public school, Catholic school. Oh, they found ways to go tribal and stuff. So it's not that like, like white trash came from me having been called white trash. But again, not what I wanted to fucking say. Why did that come up again? How did we get on that subject? Oh, the lady in the fucking window.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I was going to say, I want to see the lady in the window because then it'll take all the power away from it. But like, maybe I'm not meant to see the lady in the window to make it more haunting so that I don't ever fuck up again and don't say something like, oh, it's from a white trash town.
And she wears it as a badge of honor. I didn't even give him the satisfaction to tell him who I was.
Well, I wonder if she realizes
the truth
that
is she's probably dead by now.
I know, probably. She probably doesn't realize that she couldn't be seen, right? She doesn't realize like the optics of screens or something like that. She probably thought we were going eye to eye.
Because she could see you fine.
Yeah, exactly. It was like being in a confessional booth in a sort of way and stuff. But Yeah, I'm sure. I'm not going to say she ate out on that fucking story, but I'm sure there were a few people that heard, like, I told them what for.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, I told this fucking little ass what for. All right. So Bri, happily ever after, married and shit like that. And
you know, I, let me tell you this real quickly.
Please,
the engagement.
Yes.
This, you're like, she's special. I know she's the one, blah, 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 all that shit. Because after we got engaged, no, I said, like, Fantasy Fest is basically a Mardi Gras.
Mm-hmm.
So we're there for 3 nights, and each of the nights, she dresses progressively sluttier. Because that's the whole thing down there. They don't, nobody flashes anymore.
Right.
That's a thing of the past. I think because of camera phones and people getting fired and shit.
So wait, are you talking that it's not in New Orleans?
No, it's in, it's on,
this, it's in Key West? It's
Duval Street in Key
but
West.
But it is a kind of Mardi Gras thing.
It's exactly like Bourbon Street.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you were there successive nights, a few nights in a row, and each night she was taking off more and more.
She would take a little bit more, yeah. The last night she wore
and you were like, that's my kind of white trash. See, yes. I did it again, and now I'm in trouble. Time, Dottie Kovic's going to write me a fucking letter. wait, so what did you, so why? Explain why that was a good thing.
Because there's something inside me that likes showing her off, and she doesn't mind being exhibited.
Right.
She likes it.
I mean, well, it's... You know, if anyone's ever seen Mary Beth, like, there's a reason to be proud. Of course you want to show her off. You know, same way that, like, you know, I fell in love with Jennifer Schwalbach. But let's be honest. First thing was like, oh, man, she's real pretty. Like, she was aesthetically pleasing. Then I got to know her and I was like, oh, man, I think she's amazing and shit like that. But I always remind my wife, like, you know, love is very important. I was like, but this all shit, everything here is predicated on fucking. Like, we fucked, and that's what changed the world. Changed our world, changed your fucking life, changed my life for sure. But if you see Mary Beth, you'd realize, like, why he would want to fucking show off. And not that Brian's, like, some sort of hideous fucking chud, but she's
above my pay grade.
It's like, it's his gen, and as much as, like, she's way out of my league and shit. His lady's a little out of his, well, let's be honest, way out of his fucking league. But it speaks volumes for Brian's character and a sense of humor because, you know, she's like, all right, I'll shack up with this old man.
Really?
You got it over the youth, dude.
Oh, I know. I told her in 3 years we're going to move to a retirement community.
It's going to be so sweet. Think of how much money you'll save. She'll love it.
Save money, a pool, all kinds of stuff, other old people to gossip with.
Totally. Fucking new friends who are not threatening.
Yeah, really.
And you want to talk about admiring your young wife. They'll all be like, oh, my God, I wish I had her youth. I'm so close to
all
death.
All the old ladies will be mad. All the young old guys will
They'll be clucking their tongues, but the dudes will be like, hey, can we borrow the mower? Hello, Mrs. Johnson. How goes the TESD Patreon?
Goes
insanely
very well.
Successful.
People are like, I'm continually surprised at how supportive people are, how smoothly it goes. It's in no small part to Walt and a guy right here, Tommy Lincoln, who spearheads a lot of this stuff. You know, like merchandise.
I was gonna say, there's no way you guys fucking did this on your own.
No way.
No, there's not enough initiative. And every time I would see an album, every time I would see like an event, every time I would see like something, I'm like, how the fuck did they get it together enough to do this?
Because you know the way it goes. You surround yourself with talented people who know what they're doing.
Bang.
And like, we've got a fucking tight team. You know, we're really
TESD Town. It's an impressive operation. Like, we watched it out west for a couple of years. And then this year launched that Kevin Smith Club where I'm like, Let's do that. But you guys do a lot more in yours. Like you, I mean, at least from my perspective, I'm not saying, I don't want it to sound like that Kevin Smith Club's a ripoff. But for me, you guys do more because I'm like, I know you guys. And to hear like that green screen thing, we were talking about before I got on the show. It's a long story, but you'll find out there's a reason why this all happened, but cut to the chase. There's a wall that's going to get painted green. And I was like, why? And they said, Walter requested it. I was like, for what? And they said, Walter does green screen for Tell 'Em Steve Dave. And I was like, what? What do you mean? They know what green screen is? They were podcasters. Watching you guys flourish as a production entity has been inspiring. I remember back when you started doing like the pinball, what was it?
The pinball twins
videos and shit. And even that blew my hair back where I'm like, is Brian Johnson acting? Like, is this something he would have made fun of me for doing like
definitely.
20 years ago? And now he's embracing it.
Now I don't give a fuck at all. I'm like, I'm just going to do shit.
I mean, well, you've got an enviable audience. Like whenever people talk to me about like, oh, Kevin, he's got that audience and shit. I always quickly point to the TESD audience, which is like, you know, been the wind beneath your wings for the last fucking decade and stuff. And you want to talk about an audience that like is loyal. Like there are cats who I saw so many TESD shirts during the tour. I saw so many shirts of you with the fucking jail.
Oh, my mugshot.
Yeah. Every time I saw that, like it would make me smile outwardly and smile inside because I'm like, fuck, there's my fucking friend is like a legend, like amongst these people, people that know fucking like think of him as I always thought of him. Like that to me was when I brought you guys on the Smodcast. I was like, they just got to hear how fucking funny they are, man. And then I'd be like, come back on the show. And he'd always be like, no, man, people don't like us. They just listen to us because it's you. And I'm like, no, they don't. They like the fucking cut of your jib and what you guys are fucking saying and stuff. Watching you guys like slowly find your power and embrace it and watching the world or your audience at the very least see you the way I saw you guys, like that does it for me. That's such an amazing sense of accomplishment for me, even though I didn't do anything. But it's just like that was the dream. I was like, let me show these fuckers to people. And then when I was like, you guys got to do a podcast together, man, you should. And then they didn't do it. And then one day Walt, do you talk about that anymore? Can we talk about that?
What's up?
When you were not in a good space?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
We've talked about it on the podcast. Yeah, so I just didn't know if it was so forward. Like, tell him Steve Dave is birthed in a moment of desperation. Like, I'd been asking these cats to sit down and do a podcast forever because I'm like, people love you on my show and shit. But Walter had called me one day to say, like, you know, you got to call Brian. And I was like, I'd love to. Why? And he's like, he's in a weird, bad place. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, he's not saying the right things right now. He's like, you should just call him. And I was like, all right. And I called up Brian, Big, how are you? And Brian was very forthright. There was no like fucking chitter chatter. He was like, well, I got one foot on the stool. And, you know, I knew exactly what the fuck that meant. And I was crushed. I was like, you? No. Why you? You're the most impressive fucking person I know. Doesn't matter how other individuals feel about a person. It's how the individual feels about themselves. And at that point in time, Brian didn't feel very highly about himself. So
maybe an all-time low.
Yeah, I had to be for you to say something like that, like because that's completely uncharacteristic of Brian. It wasn't gallows humor. That was literally a cry for fucking help.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna kill myself.
Pretty much, like, and I remember one of the most harrowing things I had to hear, and I remember going like, "No, are you fucking out of your mind? People think you." I said, "Before you do anything, I said just record some podcasts." And Brian's like, "That's not the cure for this." And I was like, no, I'm serious. I think it'd be good for you, man. It'd be good for you. And Walter was like, look, I'm in. I'll record podcasts with him. And, you know, Walter later said that he was like, I said yes, because like anything Brian does, I assume he'd do it twice and stop. He's going, I didn't realize that it would become what it is. So suddenly there was a reason to do something. You know, look, you got to do this thing. It's a little bit therapeutic. Brian... Like, I remember being out on the road and I would tell that story and be like, podcasting saved Brian's life because he found his worth. He put his voice out there. And oddly enough, you never know what it's going to take. But like in this instance, what mattered to him, it wasn't his friends going, you're fucking funny, dude. It was strangers, people he'd never met, listening to him on iTunes and writing reviews about the show. Because I remember I called up after they finally posted what became Tell Him Steve Dave. And I was like, how do you feel? And he said, well, I took my foot off the stool. I said, oh, thank God. Why? And he said, you said that I'm reading these reviews. People are writing things about me and saying things about me that my closest relatives have never said. Like they make me feel good. Like it was like, you know, a kid finding out that taking a whiz feels good, but like a dude starved for that whiz. Like he just needed someone who wasn't like his friends or perhaps his family to validate him, to be like, you're fucking funny, dude. Like, cause he was so quick to write it off as, well, you just say that cause you like me. But you know, I was smart enough to be like, well, if you're not going to use it, I will use that for Randall because I saw the value in it, you know, but what came with the value of like what came with Randall. Like I got Randall and Brian has Randall, like he is Randall, to boost him. That's his sense of self-esteem, his sense of humor, stuff like that. But I got to do Randall where he didn't have to deal with the dark side. He didn't have to deal with why that exists, why he has to be funny and stuff like that. And so it's been nice to see you. I'm certainly not so stupid as to be like, you're cured. But it seems like that is way behind you. Like, do you even recognize that guy anymore?
No. If I were to try to summon up those feelings, like to explain to somebody how it felt, I don't think I could do it.
Mm.
Because it was like almost like a different person, you know? Like sometimes you look back and it's almost like it wasn't real. It was in a movie you saw because it's there, but it's like faded and hazy and you can't really identify with it. You can't believe like, oh, I can't believe I was that person for that period of time, you know?
Did the drugs hurt or help?
Well, for a little while they helped. It helped. And I was so ignorant of the opiates that I remember at first taking them and being like, why would they not give this to people with depression? It feels so fucking good. It just, it corrected everything.
It did until it didn't.
It made you not care. Yeah. And then you got to take a little more to get that feeling, then a little more. And then eventually you're not going to get that feeling at all.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's like anything. You chase the dragon.
Yeah. Yeah. You're chasing it. And
so wait, what happens first? What, the normal dose doesn't give you the same feeling anymore?
Yeah. Like at first I was just taking 5 milligram Percocets and, you know, I could take one of them a day and feel good for a while. And then, you know, after taking them for a while, I needed 2. And then I'm like, but I don't want to take all this Tylenol and shit. So I told my doctor, hey, can I just take oxys instead, which is just the pure oxycodone. And I got 15 milligrams, like 90 of them a month. And then I knew someone else who had a prescription that didn't need it. So they were just giving it to me. And then it got to a point where it's like I said, again, I look back and I'm like, who was that guy? Because I wouldn't like him. I would not like that person.
Right.
Unreliable, fucked up, constantly spending money on this shit. Like, that's what mattered, you know? Thankfully, I never got to the point where I'm like, all right, I'll do heroin.
Right. Where you're like, that's cheaper.
Yeah. It did that's occur what happens. Towards the end. It occurred to me towards the end. I'm like, it would just be so much cheaper to get heroin. But I'm like, now, if I'm thinking that way, I got to stop it right now.
So weird, too, because we had, like, a guy who had a heroin problem at one point in our midst, someone you could judge and be like, oh, grow up.
And when we first found out, I remember you telling me, I remember exactly where we were, you telling me, and knowing nothing about heroin, like knowing nothing about what it did to people. And then, but then it made sense because I'm like, he would be in the store and just not
out.
Yeah.
And we always thought it was funny. We're like, this fucking dude, he's narcoleptic.
Yeah. He's up painting these little figures all night. A fucking douchebag. Go to bed.
He's painting his fucking nostrils, fucking hair on and shit.
Yeah. It was crazy. And then once you found out, you were just like, dude, knock it off. And I could never understand what it was like until people were like to me, like, hey, knock it off.
And you're like, oh, I'm the muse.
Yeah. If I could, I would. Yeah. I'm muse now.
The, how many years ago was that at this point?
Well, I took
some. You were out, and I remember you came out to California because you were there for the like Easter brunch. It's like one of my first Instagram posts ever was us at the Easter brunch.
Mm-hmm.
And you were there, and then like shortly thereafter, you started to go to like rehab.
Yeah,
that
was when I was in rehab. So that I think that would have been like 2014, something like that.
Feels like a fucking lifetime ago.
It does. It seems like probably because it was a drug haze, it just seems so fuzzy. And it's not really a time you want to remember anyway, so you don't really.
Look at me bringing it up. I'm like, remember you when you were on drugs? And you're like, yeah, Kev, I'd rather not fucking die. I haven't seen you in a while. Let's talk about the big 10th anniversary show that you guys were going to have. And then I guess can't or will still or what? Like, this was going to happen when?
This originally was supposed to happen. What was it? June 11th.
June 11th was going to be the 10th anniversary. And why'd you guys pick June 11th? Is that truly the 10th anniversary of Tell Him Steve Day?
It was a date that Q was available. I think our true 10th anniversary was like in February. This was just sort of the party.
Right on. And so they were doing a show at the same place we kicked off the Reboot Roadshow Tour at the beautiful Paramount in Asbury Park, which is a fucking barn. What, 1,500, 1,600 seaters?
Yeah, I think it's 16. Yeah.
How did you guys do?
I don't know, because we had to cancel it.
Is that right?
Yeah, we were selling tickets. It was going pretty well, right? And then
I remember it was in my timeline seeing people like 10th anniversary show.
Yeah, then the COVID shit kicked in and ticket sales slowed down. And then we got news from the Paramount.
They're not doing anything. Yeah.
And I remember saying to someone, they were like, it was like in March or maybe early April. They said, hey, do you think we're still going to have the show? And I was like, I think so. I was like, if this shit's still around by June, we're totally fucked.
Welcome to fucked.
Yeah. I mean, who would have
actually
guessed,
now man? We're beyond totally fucked as it's October.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. How have you been faring in the age of COVID? Can you wear a mask with a beard like that?
You can, but it's kind of pointless because there's all the, you know, all America come in. But, you know, I do it because you got it, but I'm not a... I don't know whether how well the mask.
I talked to Walter before. Walter was here before we started recording. He had to go home and stuff. Otherwise, he'd be hanging out with us. But Walter was just like, he's like, you know anybody that got it? And I was like, I know one guy, Mike, who does our weed, the caviar weed, caviar Mike. He does our Snoogin, Snoogie Boogie's Berserker. Mm-hmm. He got it.
I got to say, that shit's good too.
Isn't it fantastic? Yeah, really, oh my God, he's a genius. He's a weed wizard. But my man is big, built, and in shape. And like fucking like, you know, he could literally beat the shit out of anybody. He's not that aggro guy, but he's fucking built like a fucking tank. He got the COVID. He lost 40 pounds. Whoa. And this dude did not have 40 pounds to lose and shit. And he was like, that's the closest I've ever come to death. So like, I was like, I know one guy. Walter's like, I don't know anybody. Do you know anybody? If he doesn't, how could
the only person, I mean, I don't even know him directly. It was my urologist's ex-wife's sister or some shit. Like,
she passed,
but yeah, she was like 40 and she was like, he was like, she was healthy 40, but just hit her the wrong way.
See, that stories like that is what fucking like gives me pause. Like I felt okay in Jersey for a minute until you said that. And then I'm like, really?
I've been running around Jersey since last March, and I'm all right.
That's and also like Jennifer, you know, coming out here naturally. Jennifer was just like, "Do you really have to do this? Do you really have to go east in the middle of a pandemic?" I was like, "I'm not saying the pandemic's over, but like, it's you know, there are places in the country that aren't as locked down as Los Angeles is right now. So like, you know, back in Jersey, they're actually." Kind of open. I said, be honest with you, their numbers are better than ours right now. You should be more worried that like fucking I might bring it there rather than me bring it home and stuff.
So that's like a local director, super spreader.
Shitty director, super spreader. I was like, wow, such great wordplay. And didn't know they could say
at my expense, but still.
Yeah, yeah. Really.
I know they say shit in the newspaper.
But yeah, she was concerned. She was just like, oh, very concerned. But I was like, I think they've got less of it there. I said, look, if I do the same shit that I do at home, like wear a mask, fucking wash my hands and stuff, and you know, I'm dealing with people who aren't sick. It's not like I'm running around licking people's faces. I said, it should be fine. So fingers crossed, knock wood, because I don't know if I can, if that dude, that dude's strong. And if he was just like, I almost died. Michael Rooker too was just like, Rooker got it, and he went and got like an Airstream and fucking kicked it in an Airstream with no drugs. He wasn't like taking anything. He was just like, I'm gonna let my immune system do it. He was just like,
that's crazy.
I mean, I was like, and he's like older than us.
Yeah,
like if I'm 50, he's got to be 60. So like, he's definitely high risk, but he went for it and said, and you know, he's like, it's no joke. He's going, it gave me a hell of a battle, but my immune system kicked its ass.
Wow, that's nuts.
I don't know.
No, that's almost like that evangelical shit, like that newborn Christian stuff where they're like, we don't use medicine. Mm. That kind of crap.
And right now it's just like, even you got no choice because they don't have medicine to use. Yeah. Like, we don't use medicine. Well, neither do we until they get a fucking vaccine, which I understand is coming early 2021.
That's what they were saying. I heard that on source today.
Before we get out of here, you're busy making, you know, podcasts and shit for Tom Seep Tape. Do you watch anything anymore? Do you have time to watch shit? I know you watch Rick and Morty.
Ton of stuff.
Did you watch the most recent season of Rick and Morty?
I have not. No,
it's amazing. Make the time. Yeah. Also, Justin did he did another series called Solar Opposites. It's on Hulu.
Oh, I heard that's good. Yeah.
It's fucking fantastic. Okay. Watch it. What have you been watching?
It's weird. A lot of old stuff, like, because that's one of the great things about dating someone so young is like, she's definitely old soul type.
Right.
and loves, like, almost like we watch Good Times.
Oh, shit.
All in the Family. We, like, right now we're going through all 11 seasons of The Jeffersons. And I got to say, George Jefferson is easily the most racist character of all time. He says honky and zebra and all kinds of shit.
All the time. He had an opinion on everybody.
It's amazing, man. But as far as new stuff, we watch a lot of documentaries and shit. I'm trying to pull one up right now, Operation Odessa, about these guys who tried to sell a nuclear submarine to a drug cartel.
I almost watched that.
It's definitely worth watching.
Is it worth watching? Oh, yeah. I was reading it and I was like, this sounds all right. And they were like, they showed like it was a real sub.
Yeah. It's crazy.
They were just going to use it for drugs.
Yeah. I showed her the other day, Devil's Playground, that old documentary about the Amish. Oh, I showed her Overnight about Troy McDuffie.
Did she like it?
She did. She's like, I've never seen someone fuck up so badly.
It's a crazy tale of Schadenfreude or Schadenfreude or whatever they call it.
Oh, my
God. But he did, I guess, get I wouldn't say the last laugh, but like people love Boondock Saints.
Oh, they really do.
It's got its hardcore cult.
Yeah. You know what was interesting before we go? On this last Impractical Jokers cruise, you know, Q and I do the Space Monkey show. We do it twice while we're there.
Brian Johnson, Brian Quinn, and Walter Flanagan, of course, do Tell 'Em Steve Dave. But then, like, you know, every super group, there's a side act and shit. And so Brian Quinn and Brian Johnson do a show called Space Monkeys.
Right.
So that's what brings Brian on the Impractical Jokers cruise, other than the fact that he knows and loves Quinn.
Yeah, so,
and the rest of the guys as well.
Yeah, we do that show. It's a midnight show, and this time around, you know, they have a bunch of different comedians and performers and shit to entertain throughout the cruise. And Jim Brewer was like the biggest comedian there. So I asked him if he wanted to come on the second Space Monkey show, and he did. He came on, and I said, "I'm going to tell you something that I don't think you're going to believe, but it's really crazy, but." Back in the 90s, there was a Clerks pilot, I said, and you played Randall. And he was like, yeah, I remember that, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And then I said, I'm the guy that Randall was based on. It was not as meta as I thought it was going to be. I don't think he understood. I was like, the movie Clerks, which of course he's familiar with.
Right.
I said, the character of Randall, I was like, my friend Kev, based on me. So you were playing a version of me. Isn't that weird? And it didn't seem like it weirded him out that much.
He was just like, cool.
Yeah, anyway. Basically.
And I'm sure he's like, remember how I was like, hey, man, remember when you did drugs? That's him. You gone. Remember when you did a pilot nobody liked or saw? In front of a live studio audience. And he's like, yeah, thanks. Moving on.
Yeah, let me embarrass you a little bit back.
What else? You got Brewered and shit.
Yeah, I love that guy. He can tell a story.
Yeah, yeah.
Jim Brewer.
Oh, just not about being on the Clerks cartoon. Clerks sitcom, apparently.
Yeah, I thought that was like, again, like that was one of those moments. I'm sitting on stage and I'm like, it's so bizarre that this guy did that. And
with the tangential connection. You're like, dude, you wouldn't have that job years ago if I didn't exist. And he's like, what?
Yeah, I should get some of that paycheck.
Yeah, I want a taste. I want prima nocta. You're not wrong, dude. There's a lot of people out there. Without you, they wouldn't be doing what they do. Anybody that watched my thing and then said, like, oh, I want to sail my ship, that's trickle down as well. That also comes from fucking you.
But at the same time, like, there is, if someone were to ask me, like, I don't meet you, and someone's to ask me, like, hey, what do you want to do? Like you said earlier, it's not, Walt and I are not the industrious type. At the time, we certainly weren't like a believe in ourselves type.
Very true.
I would have never in a million years been like, the job I want to do is being myself. And you were the first one, the only one, to introduce that idea. And I remember you saying it like,
I stole it. Like, you know where I got the idea. We listened to Stern growing up.
Yeah.
And he had it true. Great. He literally was just himself. He rolled, as far as we knew, He rolled out of bed. He told stories about what he did the night before, fucking like his friends and fucking goof around and make fun of each other and shit like that. And I was like, fuck, that's the way to be, man. If you can just be your own person, be the story. Like, it's one thing to make a movie. Don't get me wrong. That's great. But like, if you can do that, if you can keep an audience without a movie, just by being yourself, just by like, you know, hey, my world take, my world view or what I think or the things I say. is that's a great fucking gift. It's a gift that you unknowingly or unwittingly gave me, or one that I fucking stole like Prometheus. I just took the fire from the gods and shit. But it's one that I've been happy to see you indulge in. It's been so delightful to see both you and Walter like rise to your power, so to speak. Like fucking assume the mantles you were meant to assume. You were just, and this, you know, it sounds like I'm blowing my friend, but it's true. You guys were just too important to only be known by me and a few people in the town. You know what I'm saying? You just were so different. Like I spent that whole Reboot Roadshow tour. Whenever I introduced Jay, I was like, I met a guy, you know, who is like a true American original, and he became my passport to the world, man. He's the rocket sauce and shit. You guys are the exact fucking same, like true American originals. I'm not even the American original I am unless I meet you three and take a little piece from everybody and stuff. So I don't know. We don't meet. I still like the arts. I still want to do shit, but like, I don't really have anything funny or original to say until I meet you. Or maybe I don't have the way to deliver it. But suddenly I was like, that's fucking funny, man. And really, it was just us. It was just like, well, that's what he says. Like fucking Brian says this, and then sometimes I'll say that. Walter will say that and shit. Let's just be ourselves, essentially. And Clerks was a first stab at that. Clerks was a first attempt at trying to be oneself for a living before I understood the concept. That was just me going, I want to make a film and shit. But what did we make a film about? What did I make a film about? Us. Like, I didn't go far. It's not like, look at this Wookiee. Look at this droid. Like, I fucking made us the story. And then just we got lucky enough that years down the road, shit hung in there enough. The audience hung in there with us long enough where we could be the story. That's one of my favorite things about podcasting. And about Smodcast particularly. It has been my opportunity to put all the people that I'm impressed by on a stage, you know, because they all put me on a stage, whether they knew it or not. It was with their help I got where I was going. When I brought you guys on to Smodcast, that was my way of saying, like, here are two people. If you think I'm funny, these guys are really fucking funny. And being proud of people agreeing with me or being like, they are fucking hysterical and blah, blah, blah. You know, Mosier, of course, very highlighted by Smodcast. And that's, you know, he wasn't known except as the producer and he had a few bit roles. They got to hear him. They got to understand him, like him, not the work or like, you know, they got to know me through the movies first. And then I would tell them who I was on a stage or whatever. Fuck. And my backstory was always a big part of it. But there was the veneer of a lie, of art, of Clerks, of fake characters and blah, blah, blah. We got to a place, and, you know, I hope this doesn't sound self-aggrandizing because I'm not saying, like, we're better than everybody. I'm just impressed because I knew us back when. We got to a place where we got to be ourselves for a living. Like, I always thought of you as funny as Howard Stern. I always thought of you as our Howard Stern. I always thought of you as the guy who, like, if Howard ever quits, Brian Johnson should do that job. And I was, like, right. Like, I was wrong, but I was right. It ain't Howard. You don't have to be the next Howard. You're the first Brian Johnson. And everybody fucking knows it now. Not just people who listen to podcasts, but people who watch fucking television. People who just pay attention to pop culture. Your ideas infected generations going forward. Not just me, where I was like, that's fucking funny. But people who are Randall to this day. There's a nation of incels trapped in their parents' basement because of you.
That's not a great rep.
Still.
Yeah, that's better than nothing. I would say you, on a personal level, like what I would thank you for is you were not only probably the first one to not only indulge, but to run with the scenario. Like the fun that I had, like when we first started hanging out and I was like, because you can't do that with a lot of people.
Hypotheticals. We didn't have a name for it at first, but I would always just describe it as like the thing Bri does, you know, where he makes up a story. Hypotheticals. Like, you know, fucking say you would do that. Like essentially the flying car. Like how far would you go for a flying car? Would you suck a dick for a flying car? All right. What if they said this? What if they said you cut a foot off? Like, would you do that? That was Brian's stock and trade. Like, and it was fascinating and endlessly fun. And I was happy to play along. like I always got the impression that until I came along, you had a lot of people be like, all right, I'm done, and fucking move away from the game.
Yeah, suck a dick for it.
They just grew tired and moved on. But I was like, yeah, but then who sucks a dick? Him? Me? I can't wait.
It's so true. And it's like, and that's what I meant by like Quick Stop and RST, like being, you know, if we went to college, that
was
would
our,
be the
that was our campus.
Because that's all we did all day was fucking joke around and make shit up. And it really did service us so well in the future. You know, like just being able to sit at a mic and talk to your friends and like Brian Nichelle said it.
Brian Nichelle was the quasi-director. What was his official title?
He was showrunner.
But he really, he was technically like, to me, he felt like a director. He'd be like, come over and be like, not to take away from Jeremy, who was considered the director, but he was the director of photography.
He was a DP, yeah.
DP. But yeah, Nichelle was the guy who was like, all right, like, so in this bit, I'm looking for this. You guys should cover these topics. So I always thought of him as the director. But yeah, showrunner. But anyway.
Showrunner. Wait, what was I saying now?
Brian Nichelle. You were like, it's like Brian Nichelle said.
Yeah.
Well, I know, I blew you off your track. It was about complimentary shit.
You remember, Tommy? Shit.
About how we interact or something.
Oh, I know. Thank you. You know, and Brian Nichelle has done many reality shows.
Right.
And he said, you guys are the only ones that if I were to say, talk about this, before I almost finish the sentence, you're talking about it, and you'll talk about it for as long as I want you to. He said that is not the case in almost every other set. He's like, you know, we'll be like, hey, just have a conversation. They'll be like, about what? And like, they don't know how to do it, and it's stilted.
Talk to her? Why?
Yeah. He said it's just, it's extremely rare.
And well, like, you guys,
I remember
go
feeling
back
proud
to,
about that.
You guys go back to fifth grade. I mean, that's, this precedes even me. Like, really, like, you know, believe me, I'm a major feature in this story, but it all begins with you two meeting in fucking fifth grade because you start that relationship where he enables that sort of stuff. Yeah. Like he, I mean, still to this fucking day, like no, I always consider myself the biggest Brian Johnson fan on the planet. Obviously, Mary Beth that now, but really probably Walter, like believes in you. Like, even though he can be very dismissive and fucking mocking and blah, 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 because that's his way and shit. But I don't want to be around. This sounds grim because I don't want to die either. But I don't want to be around if you go and he doesn't. I think you'll see a profoundly affected Walter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. He honestly, like, it's easy to see. He still, to this day, like, worships the ground you walk on.
We're like 85 still doing Patreon.
Yes, absolutely. Right to the grave. And it won't be green screen. It'll be like VR or some shit.
I told Q, I would like, look, I don't want any of us to die ever. But I'm like, if it has to happen, I want Walt to be dying as I'm standing there and him being like, I cannot believe this cocksucker outlived me.
Please say those are his last words as well. As long as we get him on tape.
He could have said something to his wife or kids. He chose to be like,
he just sees you. Come closer. Closer. Well, without you guys, we got nothing, man. Thank God you guys met. And thank God I met you guys. And thank God particularly I met you. Like I said, fucking, you know, of course he's a very powerful individual, but he was very busy dating Debbie Grasso in the beginning. Oh, yeah. I might have fallen by the way. So I honestly might have gotten bored and been like, this guy don't really care about me. I sooner or later would have come to the conclusion he's using me for rides to comic book stores. We're not really friends.
But, you know what he does have for a ride for? The DMV.
But hanging out with you, like, you know, like I was like, all right, there's, you know, benefits to this Walter thing. There's a real friendship here, just ironically with Brian, not with Walter. But I came through Walter, so it is Walter. Thank you for being you guys. And thank you for hanging out and chit-chatting and whatnot. And congratulations again, and sorry for missing the wedding. Boy, that's a lot of fucking sentiments.
Yeah, no, thank you. I love to do this. Like, this to me, like, for lack of a better word, I'm like, it feels like home, you know?
I agree, man. I agree. Comfy as fuck. And like, how, like, it's an hour and a half easily, like, with, and no time went by whatsoever. And we did a lot of catching up. There it is, kids. You heard Dante and Randall sitting around still talking after all these years. the real Dante and Randall. We're like when you go see a band and they're like Styx and you show up and you're like, no, these people are Dennis DeYoung.
These aren't OG.
But we are, ironically, are the OG.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is a parallel. Well, there is. There's a guy named, you know, Big Lebowski. Of course, we love that movie. Mm-hmm. There's a guy named The Dude who in real life.
The real dude.
Yeah, the real dude who's like, who I met at film festivals and stuff. Jeff, what's his name? Jeff. His last name escapes me. I'm a little stoned. But, you know, he exists. So you're kind of, you guys are kind of like, me and you are both kind of like the real life, the dude that the Coen brothers based the dude on, but I'm the Coen brothers and we're both the dude. This really fell apart.
More ambitious dudes.
There it is, man. You got to hang out and fucking listen to Dante and Randall do what they did at fucking Quickstep. God, thank God we got employed together too. Yeah. Fuck. Amen. So many things could have went wrong, and yet we're sitting in the middle of something that went oh so wrong. I understand a lot of people listening to this audience must be like, I am sick by how self-satisfied you two are.
tell me something bad happened.
Yeah. You know, fucking...
If you want to hear bad, listen to the first 8 years of Tell Him Steve Dave.
Yeah, give him his fucking moment. Don't take his shine away now.
Be said.
Fuck, let's celebrate him, Brevin Sakes. There it is, man. For Smodcast, I'm Kevin Smith.
Brian Johnson.
Have a week.
This podcast has been produced exclusively for members of ThatKevinSmithClub.com.